It is Saturday, April 2nd, 2011, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News. In the second half, your questions and comments.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Al Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the second half of the show, we'll be inviting you to join the conversation. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. The theme song today is by Dave Portera. And we thank him for contributing to Geek Speak. If you'd like to contribute to Geek Speak with a theme, we'd love to have your theme be played on air. Just email us. Go to geekspeak.org. And, of course, all the content we produce on the show is available at geekspeak.org. And, of course, our podcast as well. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the air and with me, I've got Laura Klein. She's a developer relations. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
We have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect.
Hello, everybody.
And Lindsay Lonnie, a systems analyst.
Good morning.
We're going to be doing geek news, and I think we'll go ahead and start with Lindsay. I think we'll start with you. What's going on in the iPod world?
So, basically, future iPods could charge through nanowires embedded in our clothing and our bodies. Well, you know, that's theoretical, the bodies part. But Dr. Zonglin Wang of the Georgia Institute of Technology is working on a technology that would allow our own bodies to charge our electronic gadgets in the future. So his inventions are called nanogenerators, and the idea is centered around zinc oxide nanowires. They generate electricity when flexed. So in principle, the nanowires are small enough to sew or embed into pretty much everything. So your sweater, we could put those into your famous sweater.
Which might I add, if Lyle's sweater today had nanowires in it, he could probably power this entire station.
Yes.
If you saw his sweater.
I'm very impressed. 4 minutes, very good. 4 minutes in the show, you mentioned my beautiful sweater.
Yes.
You know, if only there was some kind of way to share the sweater with people, it would change people's lives. It's a beautiful
fabulous.
Sweater. Isn't it? Thank
we'll
you.
We'll post a picture.
No, okay. Man.
Anyway.
Geekspeak.org, all the content we talk about available there.
Exactly. So these nanowires are small enough to embed into pretty much anything. So 500 nanowires can fit into a single human hair. So if they were, if they're embedded, you know, in your pants or sweater or whatever, every step that you take, every move that you make, they'd be charging you.
So it's producing electricity.
Exactly.
You'll be recharging your devices.
Yeah, and you can fund all of that into, you know, a battery pack or your gadgets or whatever. And then, you know, one of the people writing this article had a funny idea, basically that we could have these implanted into our bodies and have a little output port, you know, for our charging. And in the future, that's going to be the dystopic future.
I think capes will come back, right? Because they flap around and everybody wants to wear
back?
A cape. They just want to have an excuse.
Capes are cool.
Capes are great. Unless you fly, and in which case they're really dangerous.
Generate tons of kinetic energy.
That's right. What more can
power
you want?
Power lots of stuff.
Yeah. I want a nano... What is it called? Nanowires?
Nanogenerators.
Nanogenerators.
Wait, I think you said... Yeah, nanogenerators. Yeah. Zinc oxide nanowires.
You know, that's kind of a drooling thing. Now, are you sure this is true? This didn't come out yesterday?
It's kind of theoretical at this point.
All right. So they've tested some. They figured out, you could do this.
And right.
We'll see that
Another
product
thing.
In 50
yeah.
years when we can fly in cars, right?
You got it.
Thank you, Lindsay. But there was a lot of tech stories yesterday that weren't real.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. So April Fool's Day yesterday. Moral of the story, don't believe anything you read on April 1st. Everybody's getting into the action. Got a list of some of the top fake news stories. Google, of course, came in with a bunch of really funny ones. I actually like the autocompleter job description as one of their options.
Nice.
But of course, the famous one, the the gestures based, what was it, the keyboard, the keyboard input, throw your keyboard away and instead and use your webcam and your gestures to actually kind of do your common computing tasks.
How far did they take that? Did they just have like a video of it, or could you like download an app that tried to do stuff for you?
So it all depends. Google also did a Comic Sans, All the World Would Be Comic Sans, and I believe that actually did have a working extension as part of it. Nice. Everything else was just videos, but I did want to call out two particularly interesting ones. So Reddit did one where you could give people a mold, and so they handed out little spores in advance, and then the mold, of course, it would decrease the number of comments that you could see on Reddit, and they kind of tried to make it sort of a hip, you know, only certain people have access to the mold, and that it's kind of a cool thing. And then what's interesting about them is they actually monetized it, so you could actually buy mold spores with their kind of Reddit dollars, which was kind of an interesting way to monetize on
April 1st.
Reddit
dollars are kind of like the comment system in Reddit, right? It gives you, okay.
Exactly. So if you wanted to participate in the April 1st joke,
you could participate.
And then they'd make money, which is, how brilliant is that? Cool. Yeah. And then I was really impressed also with the Toshiba Spectacle, a 3D monocle, just because the video that they did with that was really exceptional.
Well,
what do you mean
3D monocle?
Why, a monocle, of course, that you wear that gives you fantastic 3D definition.
Everybody's wearing monocles now.
Yeah. Right, of course. Give you 3D. How ironic.
Don't have 3D with one eye.
But the video accompanying that was really impressive, with quite a lot of money spent on CGI effects and stuff like that. So I got to admire their commitment to the joke.
To the joke, good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for keeping us apprised of the pranks for April 1st. And those will all be up on our website?
Absolutely.
All right. Al, this story you've got sounds like a prank, but it's not. What's the music industry claiming now?
Yeah. People, if you're familiar with LimeWire, which was a sort of like a Napster thing, but started before and lasted longer, it piggybacks on the Nutella network, mm-hmm. and you're able to download things like you know, apps and things, but also music. And it's been a big music download, illegal hacking kind of thing.
For quite a while, the terminology, like instead of saying search, we say Google. When you say, oh, I want to hear that song, you go LimeWire it. I mean, that was kind of the...
Right. Yeah. You literally could get anything you wanted. It went on for quite a few years. I think it probably started in the 90s. Not mm-hmm. sure. But, you know, it was an app you downloaded, and you could just type. It was like a search engine. You get all these songs. Well, you know, they finally put a stop to that. Sure. Actually, not too long ago, less than 6 months ago, they finally stopped them. They're like in the Netherlands or somewhere like that. Anyhow, the music industry has said now that we've stopped you, we are going to sue you and that. So 13 record companies are suing this LimeWire, the peer-to-peer file sharing service. And you know how much they say that LimeWire owes them?
How much?
$75 trillion.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a lot of money.
He's going to be paying for
What's the music industry's like annual revenue stream?
I know. It's like that's like, and it's like a guy who made this. You know.
Yeah. Right. Some guys like $75 trillion.
See, PG&E bill. Well, at least it wasn't $100 trillion. But basically, the judge, Judge Kimba Wood, who's hearing the case, said, that's absurd, and he laughed them out of court. They said,
I love it when you hear of a judge who's like, makes sense.
They said that award is, quote, more money than the entire music recording industry has made since Edison's invention of the phonograph in 1877.
Oh, my goodness.
That's fantastic.
I think we finally reached.
I love the way they figured that out. They said, well, we make this kind of money for this kind of song. And so this, how much downloads happen, that equates to this many songs.
Right.
Oh, you owe us this much money.
Yeah.
Of course, it's like, no.
It's completely ludicrous.
And that's wonderful.
We finally reached that point of
$75 trillion.
Yeah, $75
trillion. So nice.
Interesting number, though.
I wonder if like the domain name LimeWire.com has a story about that. I love that idea.
Well, if you go to LimeWire.com, they have a copy of their injunction.
Right.
To stop.
Right.
Not that I went there. Hey, what's wrong with my LimeWire?
You were downloading Ubuntu Linux.
That's right. Yes. You can download lots of stuff.
Via torrent.
It's file sharing. There are lots of things.
Lots of other uses, yeah.
Yes.
But it's strange. I stopped using it when BitTorrent technology mm-hmm. came to power,
right.
if you will.
Right.
And it's very similar in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Though there is that, I think, the centralized aspect of LimeWire. There's supposed to be servers that are serving content.
Well, it's LimeWire
is completely shared, distributed.
Yeah, it's LimeWire was just a, it was basically a search engine. You just type in the name and boom, there it is. You know,
Lindsay.
Yes.
What's going on with number one social ranking?
That would be plus one.
Plus one.
Plus one.
Ooh, catchy.
Google, plus one. So this is the latest Google thing. It's kind of a social rating thing. You know, when you search for something in Google and you get all these results and you're like, well, which one do I click on? Which one's the best link? Say you're shopping for a coffee maker or something like that. I think they're trying to get more into the social aspect of networking, where now if you like something, you like a page, you can say, I plus one this, and you just click on it. And it basically says that you endorse it, you like it, you prefer that page. Mm-hmm. And whoever's in your, you know, address book, social network, they can see, oh, so-and-so plus one this. Mm-hmm. That means it must be good. So if you've got a list of all the coffee makers you're deciding from, and, oh, look, mom plus one this coffee maker, not the other ones, then you're going to go to that page first.
And this is Google's social space, right, where you can actually connect your Facebook and your Flickr through them as well.
Yeah, and I don't know about the Facebook thing, but yeah, everyone freaked out about Google Buzz.
Right.
And so they yanked it.
Right.
And this is
they're
in their
the same
little
thing. They're just not calling it that anymore.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So this is kind of like a little tiny spoonful of that to get you know, on the way to the social thing from Google.
A few weeks ago, I never mentioned this, but a few weeks ago, I did put comment support on our pages, and it's run by Google.
Okay.
So it's just some JavaScript code that pulls it in. It doesn't have a plus one on it, though, so I'm going to have to.
Well, this is an experimental.
If you do have comments for the GeekSpeak show, you're welcome to go to the show page after the show and make comments, assuming you've got a Google account, and if not, make one, I guess.
Yeah.
And then, so I'll find the support for the plus one as well so that we can possibly get that ranking. You know, a long time ago, I set that up for, I can't remember the site. I don't use it anymore. One of those big aggregators.
How does this
And we never got any comment. We never got any posts. So I was just like, well, never mind.
Well, this thing, you know, it's kind of in their experimental stuff right now.
Right.
So you'd have to sign up for testing it in order to do the plus one thing and see it. You know, but if you have a Google account, it takes 2 seconds. You just click on the link and say, yeah, I want to do this. Mm-hmm. But so far, they're not saying whether or not you can, like, search for other people's plus ones. You know, like, what does mom like or whatever.
Right.
But that's going to be coming, I'm
it's
pretty
just like,
sure.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. All right. Al, are you going to say something?
Well, you were saying you added the commenting feature. How does the spam control work on that?
Well, it's...
Or is there spam control?
It's connected to a Gmail account and or Google account, and Google's pretty good about making sure robots aren't running their accounts.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm assuming that you can make a comment about, you know, you can report it.
That's a good idea.
We're not getting any posts right now, so I'm not concerned about
spam. I mean, well, it's better than, you know, usually you have like a comment section on a blog or something, and you get loaded.
Why I turn off my comments on my blog. I know exactly.
You get things like, I really agree with your point. I'd like to hear more about this. And that's the comment. You think, oh, somebody wants to hear more about this.
It sounds like you edit.
It's like, admin on there's nobody blogs. Commenting. These are all robots.
Yes.
And they're indiscriminate. And then they put a link back to their website.
Right. Which is what they're trying to get.
Right. And then they will, and basically being posted and then having a link to on a blog, having a link back is a search engine optimization. It makes you seem more popular.
And you are more popular with that. And Al, are you doing a site where you have to currently keep on removing?
I have a blog on my website
but I
kind of made it so that now I have to approve the comments,
which is even harder.
It's kind of lame because then people comment and they want to see it, and it's just...
So CAPTCHA, you know what CAPTCHA is, right?
Yes, a CAPTCHA.
So there's normally a plugin for most blog engines, which you can use ReCAPTCHA, which is I think an MIT project, which basically generates a couple images and you have to type it in, and it's pretty good about detecting robots.
Is that the one that is translating, scanning text or something?
It's that project. Hmm. So what I was talking about is that this project, a whole bunch of failed OCR, or optical character recognition, fails, where they couldn't really figure out what the word was. They take those words and actually put them on the website in pairs, and then a human being theoretically can read it better than the computer, and they guess, and hopefully you get the right word, and therefore you get to move on. We have that up on our website for our email. That's why we don't get much spam on our Geeks List.
Right.
And if you want to email us anytime you'd like, please feel free. Just go to geekspeak.org. I think it's a Contact Us button, and then you'll see that at the bottom there's an image you've got to translate for us to make sure to prove that you're human. And that's how I filter my public email address. I don't put it on my website, so I don't really do that. And it works pretty well, though every once in a while, tons of spam will come through.
A robot gets in.
Yeah. And normally when robots come in, it happens fast. All of a sudden, a whole bunch happened.
Right.
And then it seems to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those reasons why I don't normally use my own plugin or write something on my own. I use somebody else's that a lot of people are using, so that it gets updated. The algorithms gets better. Anyway, that was a little bit of a tangent, wasn't it?
Us tangent?
No, we never. Never happens. Thanks for the social plus one thing. In just a second, Al's going to tell us all about a new device on his iPad, I believe. But first, what's up with Wikipedia?
Well, so I thought this was really interesting. Wikipedia is actually going to start more actively soliciting academic experts to do articles. So they're kind of trying to analyze, figure out, doing surveys and that kind of thing. Why is it that they're not getting so many academic subject matter experts editing Wikipedia articles? And it, I think it kind of brings out some really interesting stuff about...
Because they have work to do?
Yes, exactly. They have day jobs. It brings out some interesting stuff about, you know, the democratization of information. And, you know, we all go to a Wikipedia as this really important news source, starting point for any research and that kind of thing. Are the people really writing these articles experts? Are they really the experts in their field?
Right.
So certainly seeking out more academic experts would bring more credibility to Wikipedia.
And not just credibility, truth, honesty,
absolutely.
You know, the reality, more reality to Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the tricky thing, of course, that the person you really want writing the article on whatever topic, on springs, is an engineer who designed springs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's gone through school for a long time, there's debate, and can actually reference the material correctly and pull a book off his shelf and actually say, yeah, well, this book says this. And that kind of in-depth analysis, you and I could write an entry about springs, mm-hmm. and it would be, I mean, maybe not yours, but mine would suck. But yeah, to get that expert really makes a lot of sense. How are they doing that? Are they enticing people with money?
Well, see, that's the problem is that there really is no motivation for an expert to work on Wikipedia. The motivation, the reinforcement is to do things like you publish your grants, you publish
right.
your articles. That's what's actually going to get you advancement in your field, get you more funding dollars and so on.
If you're writing an article, if you're an engineer or scientist and you're talking about metal materials and you write a whole article on better springs, that person shouldn't be entering the Wikipedia entry because that person needs to be cited. And you want that citing to happen from somebody else.
Citing original sources.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but if you do cite an original source and you happen to be the original source and you're writing the entry, that's not exactly bad. So, I mean, that's not exactly good. So you definitely want to have a volume of people on every topic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would be the preferred thing so that one expert can cite somebody else's work. So how about we do a little plea ourselves? I'd like better content on Wikipedia because that's where I look for things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what about you guys? Do you use Wikipedia?
Yep,
mm-hmm.
I used it today.
Yesterday I was mm-hmm. clearing out some books for my library and one of them was an encyclopedia.
I don't make
life-changing
decisions based on things I read in Wikipedia.
But wait, so the tattoo across your face was not a Wikipedia thing?
It's nice though.
It
yeah.
is nice.
Maybe
barbed
really pretty,
wire
like,
all the
tribal.
Way around my neck and
yeah.
Yeah. Is that really how you spell your wife's name?
Backwards for the mirror.
Yeah, it's
no,
just,
Al
know.
Doesn't have any tattoos on his face.
So, moving right along,
please. Yes, Al, you've got a bit of a story there.
Yeah. Well, we have an announcement, and I thought there's an app that surprisingly is free, and it's the one I have is for the iPad. It's called Dragon Dictation, which a lot of you are familiar with Dragon being around such for eons. I remember trying it in the 90s even, and it was terrible. But now they have this Dragon Dictation, and it's a free app that you download and you put on your iPhone or iPad, and then you just tap one button and you speak into it.
And then it translates that?
And it translates.
Okay, well, here, Al, let me give you this thing to read. On there. We have to read this for
all right.
for announcement.
All right.
Take that. First, let me just say that you're listening to Geek Speak on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Al, please.
Okay. I just open up the app.
Push the red button.
And push the red button. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by the UCSC Music Department, presenting the Los Angeles Percussion Quartet on April 6th and Boston's acclaimed Borromeo String Quartet in a special Santa Cruz appearance on Friday, April 8th, period. Both in the UC Santa Cruz Recital Hall. More information at arts.ucsc.edu.
Okay, so what is it? How does it look?
It looks,
hey, wait,
looks
hey,
pretty
Al,
good.
Can you email it or something to me?
All right, here you go.
Oh, really? Cool. Okay. I'll
email straight
I'll
out of the program.
And first, let me just say that I do work for the University of California, Santa Cruz, and I'm in the arts division. Just what is that called when you say that kind of thing?
Disclosure.
Full disclosure.
Full disclosure.
Yeah. I'm Lyle Troxell. We have Laura Klein, Lindsay, Lonnie, and Al Luckow. And I've got your email.
So how are we going to read? Are you going to read it?
No, I'm a computer read it. So that way we know that like a computer.
Oh, you're
going to
have your computer voice.
Yeah. That way we'll see how good
it is. So you can take your text.
And I see a mistake already, but we'll go ahead and do it. Okay, here goes.
GeekSpeak on QSP is supported by the UCSC Music Department, presenting the Los Angeles Percussion Quartet on April 6th, and Boston's acclaimed all-male string quartet in a special Santa Cruz appearance on Friday, April 8th. Both in the UC Santa Cruz Recital Hall. More information at arts.ucsc.edu. Sent from my iPad.
Oh, I did a whole meal, sorry.
Nice.
Okay, so a couple mistakes. That I like the UCSC. It's actually UCSC, arts.ucsc.edu, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I guess I paused a little bit there.
There's like another error in there too, but in any case, you can find out more information at arts.ucsc.edu, and thanks.
What about that Boston's acclaimed...
What was it? Boston's acclaimed...
It's Borromeo.
And it has or all male.
So they think it's the
but
all...
Borromeo, that's a little...
All male string quartet.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be a big mistake, I guess.
So what's this iPad app called?
It's called Dragon Dictation.
Okay.
And it is a free app. And the thing is, I think that when you use it, you have to... be online. It has to have access to the internet because I think it's using some processing. And then you have a choice.
Well, that makes sense. I was wondering how it was doing all the processing. So it's actually sending your audio to the server. And
it's pretty quick. I mean, as you can see, we just did it. But the other thing that's kind of neat is that you have the option, you don't have to do this, but you have the option of linking it to your address book. So when you say words like, you know, Alexander Krasinski, you know, it automatically says, okay, that sounds like this person's name, and they spell it right when you speak it.
Oh, cool.
And they don't use that information for anything else. They're very clear in the contract. We don't even know what the email address is, and we don't store it and all that kind of stuff. But it's
just to give you a definition of words that are unusual.
Right. So when you say a person's name, it actually spells it right, which is kind of cool. And then you can like email directly out of the app. So it's for the first time I feel like I could actually use a speech to text. Mm-hmm. thing, and it's odd that it's free, and I don't know why, but
they'll make money eventually
somehow.
They're hooking you into Dragon Naturally Speaking, of course.
Yeah, they might just make it you know, more expensive later.
I hope it hooks into your personal dictionary locally, you know, because then it'll remember all of your weird words that you
that's probably what they're gonna probably have an option
so
like
KUSP doesn't get turned into KUSP.
Right. yeah.
Okay, very cool. Thanks for this. Dragon. It's not called Dragon Naturally Speaking. It's called Dragon.
It's called Dragon Dictation.
Dragon
by the same company.
By the Dragon Natural Speaking Company. Yeah. All right. We're basically at the mid-break, and thanks for reading that announcement. I appreciate that. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. I'll get that information to you in just a second. Again, just to remind you what it is. But first, we are going to do a Geek Bit. So get ready to write down the phone number. And Al, I think the Geek Bit's actually yours as well. This is way cool. You did this for your dog, and tell me.
Yeah, it's called Wisdom Panel, and we got this dog, you know, less than 6 months ago or maybe more. I don't know. He was a puppy, and he was a found dog that lost. Rescued dog. And you basically have no idea what he is. He's black, and he's got a little bit of, on his white, in his chest, a little bit of white, and he's got big paws and stuff like that. We're going,
so kind of guessing the size he's going to be.
So people are like, oh, it looks like it's probably a lab, and you know, so you just don't really know. And we went to do the whole puppy package at the vet and do all the things, and the vet's like, hey, you know, if you're interested, we actually have this thing called Wisdom Panel, and it's a genetic test for your dog. It can go back two generations and actually tell what your dog's made out of. And I was
And the breeds and dogs are important because there are a lot of personality traits and what kind of things you need to do for the dog.
Yeah, there's things like some dogs, like some shepherds have like hip problems.
Right.
And it's good to know what your dog's made out of because there are certain traits that you might want to look out for or
If you get sheep herding dog, you have a very active dog, you need to move that dog around a lot. Right. A working dog is very different than it's kind of a good thing to know about your dog. So you went and got the panel.
Yes.
For,
so this
for,
is
for dog.
So I said, you know, well, of course, when he offers that to me, of course, I'm going to do it.
How can you resist?
Genetic testing for a dog.
So I took
Blake three times.
His name is Blake, and they're able to predict he's going to be between 60 and 96 pounds, which is pretty obvious already because he's going to be kind of big. And they did this, the genetic thing. They send you kind of a fax that has a little thing on it.
Did they really send you a fax?
Yeah, it was actually a fax. It looks like a fax, and then they Xeroxed it, but it's scientific data, so it's, you know, they go the last three ancestral generations that best fit the DNA marker system.
Are they able to determine, you know, which gender, which, you know, is it from the male or female?
Yes, they use the male and female. They use 11 different models of calculations, that 7 million calculations from a single breed to a complex combination of breeds. And I found out that Blake is actually a great Pyrenees mix crossed with a Vizsla and a German Shepherd.
Now, did anyone guess that when they saw that?
Nobody dog? Said.
Everyone said lab, right?
Somebody said it's got to be a lab, and he's got a little brindle in him, and they're like, well, whoa, that's probably from the German Shepherd. And so it's kind of neat. It, you know, I think one of the other, the female, I think, there's a little bit of mixed breed stuff back there, but it's a really cool thing, and it's fairly reasonably priced when you think about it. I'm not a huge fan of genetic testing for people.
We won't
mention
the price because we're public radio, but
right.
it worked for you.
Yeah, it worked for me, and it's actually kind of neat, and there's a couple of these. Somebody even told me there was a kit you could get at Costco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so... You know
what? We really should get a kit from Costco and do the same test and see if it's equivalent. Ooh. I mean, of course, the kit probably goes back to the same lab, right?
It probably
you're
does.
You're going to poke your dog with a stick first.
But it's totally a neat thing. And
Laurel, take a look at what he's got, what he designed after the fact. So Al's a designer, of course, and a new media architect.
Wow.
And so he made a pretty chart for his dog.
Well, yeah, I got pictures of the dogs and stuff and looked up
the dogs.
It's
a family tree.
It's a family tree, yeah.
Much nicer than
doggy
the facts.
Family
it's a family
tree.
Dog tree.
We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. No one's called. It means the calls are open. You can ask us anything you'd like. You can ask us about, I don't know, social media. You can ask us about your old cell phone, what to do with high voltage electricity in your home, you know, anything you want. Phone number, again, 1-800-655-5877. We'll continue with news as we wait for calls. And because Al just did all of that talking, we're going to have to go with a different person. And I think that it's Lindsay, it's your turn. What's going on with, space news, would you please?
Space! We love space. So, a couple weeks ago, NASA reached a milestone when the Messenger probe successfully managed to enter an orbit of Mercury. So, 6.5 years of work, you know, they were holding their breath, and it all seemed to pan out. And then the first image ever obtained from a spacecraft orbiting Mercury was captured at 5:20 a.m. on March 29th. And in total, a batch of 363 images were captured over a 6-hour period and transmitted back to Earth. So NASA's expecting about 1,200 more by April 4th and a total of 75,000 images by April of 2012. So,
wow.
That's got to be hot.
Yeah.
Mercury, I mean that's like got to be like...
How is the craft dealing with temperature and such?
I don't have all the details on the Messenger craft, but I can get that and post it.
Cool.
But yeah, there's other... space stuff going on too.
Well, go
so
ahead.
I don't know if you want me to just continue on here, but so another side thing is that dark matter heat could make exoplanets habitable. It's a theory. There's no way to prove it, but
some definitions. First off, an exoplanet means a planet outside of our solar system.
Exactly.
And dark matter, of course, is this mass that we have to calculate in. Because without them, solar systems wouldn't orbit the way they do. Solar systems would kind of fly apart. So there's more gravity than we expect from what we can see, so we call it dark matter.
We just saw a play on that.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really good.
Legacy
actually.
Of Light.
At San Jose Repertory Theater.
Yep.
They did a play on dark matter?
It's cool.
I wouldn't say that's the way, but yeah, it's definitely about that kind of thing. It's really a great play. I highly recommend it.
It was neat.
All right. I'll have to check that out. So the researchers on this considered rocky planets that lie within 30 light years of the galactic center. So there's more dark matter towards the center of the galaxies. And they found that planets with masses 10 times greater than Earth could scoop up enough dark matter to generate 100 petawatts of energy, which is the same as what the Earth absorbs from the sun. So
I love the idea that the inner solar system is just nice and warm and friendly.
Right.
Like, what?
Yeah.
There's a Victor Vantage sci-fi author. I think that's Victor. I have to look it up. Has a whole discussion about how the physics that we know, or bases his model of his universes off of the galaxies being very different depending how far away from the center you are.
Huh.
So different types of math and physics occur closer in because the universe is different in different densities of gravity. And this kind of, you know, supports that idea.
There
really
you
cool.
go. Imagine that.
Of course,
coming
I find it really interesting that you hear this kind of calculations on energy absorption of mass with dark matter because we know so little about dark matter.
Right.
Like, we know that it affects gravity. That's about all we know.
Yeah. And so what they're saying is, one of the theories about dark matter is that it's made up of particles called WIMPs,
right.
Weakly interacting massive particles.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole theory relies on that turning out to be accurate, which
right.
we really don't have any
right.
idea at this point in time. But if it is, then this would be possible. And the difference with something like this, the dark matter heated planet has an advantage over planets tied to a star because it's pretty much infinite. It's right. not going to eventually burn out when the star burns out. It'll stay warm. So the person writing about this was saying, you know, this could be the outposts of the universe. As the stars burn out, people are going to all migrate to these, you know, dark matter planets. But they say even the chances of it being habitable in the correct temperature.
I would say habitable. You say habitable?
Habitable.
I always say habitable.
Habitable?
Habitable. Where are you from, originally?
Northern and Southern California.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. Me too.
Tomato, tomato.
That's true.
No, it's tomato. Isn't it tomato?
It is tomato.
Okay, good. We agree.
You have the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
I love that. Say it again, Al.
You have the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Feel free to use that.
I can't say it. All right, thanks for the space update, Lindsay. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Well, what's creepy going on?
Yes. No, so
you know, we're waiting for calls. We're not getting calls. This is strange.
It's wrong with the phones.
Oh, there's no phones. Oh, right. No, there are phones. Please call us with questions and comments. 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Who do you think's right? Do you think it's what do you say?
Habitable.
Habitable or habitable? You can tell us. 1-800-655-5877. And if you tell Rick that it's going to be habitable, I'll put you on air.
Oh,
the power of the board. Okay, what's going on? Laurel, please.
Yeah, so I thought it was kind of interesting. So this security expert has actually created this application that's actually called Creepy.
Wait, we talk about this? I thought we covered this. Well, go on. What does Creepy do?
So it uses data available from social media outlets, publicly mm-hmm. available information, to determine your location.
That's creepy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so is it something download or something you use?
It's something you can download. I've played with it, actually, and it was highly accurate. It spotted me between the buildings of my campus, my corporate campus.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, yes, I was doing a tweet there. I was doing that there.
So it can pick up your GPS when you do a tweet.
Right, so a couple pieces. So when you tweet, you can choose to share your location, so that's one. But if you haven't done that, then it can actually parse the data in the tweets to look for references to locations. I'm in South Carolina, that kind of thing. It'll pinpoint you that way. And then also, when you use something like TwitPic or something like that, a picture that you take with your camera, have it, embed geolocation data in the EXIF information.
It can
parse through that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And identify your location based on pictures that you
took.
So
another thing on this is I just took a look at it. It's up at GitHub, which means it's an open source project. You can go ahead and get a copy of it and hack away at it. So it's in the wild. It's not like it's mm-hmm. I'm secret how this is doing. Of course, this is not surprising to us, right?
Right.
This is easy to do.
Yeah.
All these
publicly
services
available,
have IP,
APIs,
API.
Yeah, nothing
no problem.
Paid.
All you do is grab images.
Mm-hmm.
It's to be relatively
didn't you have
easy
a
to
buddy
do.
That did that or something or no, made
I,
some kind of thing?
You know, I thought that we did. There's been some research projects at UCSC about this kind of topic,
uh-huh.
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good, clean, pretty implementation of this. Is it a standalone application that you downloaded?
Standalone, I believe it's on Linux, Windows, and Mac, not yet for phones.
Right.
You know I'm going to download that for my phone, my iPhone,
of
as
course.
Soon as I get that, as soon as it's available. But it's one of those cases of, you know, a geek using his knowledge kind of for good, kind of for evil, for education, to just kind
good.
Of scare
I mean, I
you
and
let you know how publicly available all of your information is, even
right.
though you don't think it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Creepy.
And, of course, all the stuff we talk about is available at geekspeak.org. So if you'd like to go check a look at Creepy and check yourself out and see how bad it is in the world, if someone knows your name, go for it by going to geekspeak.org to learn about that. Thank you, Laurel. That's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Burn your computers.
It looks like we're going to be talking about nuclear power today on GeekSpeak. I wasn't expecting
nice.
That, but it's always a fun topic. In Santa Cruz, Eric, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Since it was slow, I figured I'd take up this topic and something. When you had a conversation with a geologist a couple
yeah.
weeks ago, it was a very interesting conversation, but I was troubled by a couple of things. One was that, you know, I really appreciate how you guys are constantly hammering on people for not being factual, and you strive to be factual. And, you know, of course, I know the next show you acknowledge your mistake about the prevalence of coal power to generate electricity in
right.
California. But I think it's even stronger than your acknowledgement. I don't think we have a single coal burning electric plant in California. We do import some of the
right. We use natural gas, not coal. Right.
Right. So, I just mentioned that because it kind of ties in with my larger point, which was, while I recognize there are many benefits of nuclear power, mm-hmm. and I wish you had presented some of the really serious problems, and not just the issue of Fukushima, but there are many very well-renowned physicists who are opposed to nuclear power. There's an organization called the Union for Concerned Scientists.
There's always going to be a lot of people opposed to certain things, and my feeling was that there was so much hype in the media about how dangerous nuclear energy was that I wanted to partially counter that with some factual information, which I attempted to do. Of course, due to make a mistake about claiming that we're using coal in California, we're not using natural gas. But other than that, I feel that in general, people use their emotional impact a lot more than factual studies, things of that nature. Now, I agree, there's definite problems with nuclear energy. There's problems with every energy source. And what my point was in that topic, and what I wanted to clarify, was that in the United States, we use a lot of coal for electrical generation. And I think that has a detriment as well. And saying, well, nuclear is bad because there's problems with it. If we were to start from scratch right now, coal might not be what we'd pick, right? The idea that just because that's what we're using, it's less scary or less bad for us is non-factual. It's not the reality. The reality is that we need to look at all the cases really well. And because there's so much feelings of fear around nuclear energy, it gets put on the back burner more. Now, I'm not saying that nuclear energy is the best way to go by any means. I'm saying that I hope that people, when they're thinking about these decisions, understand that there's problems with all those sources. And that's why we talked
right.
about it.
Well, I guess, my reason I'm calling now is I felt like, and I'm not, I totally agree with what you just said. There's lots of problems with coal, and there's lots of problems with natural gas, too, the hydro effect. And so I don't think, that's not my point. I'm not saying use coal and don't use nuclear, but I don't think you really, aside from Fukushima, people haven't really been talking about some of the serious problems, which is, we don't have a storage solution for the nuclear waste.
Well, would you like us to get a show on that topic?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Okay. It seemed like it was so pro-nuclear that it just would have been nice if you had
I'd be happy. Yeah, and then the other comment we had about that was that we didn't have a nuclear engineer on. We had a general environmental scientist on.
Right.
And I could definitely see doing a show like that. Thank you so much for the call, Eric. I think that's a great way to do that, and we'll go on to the other topics today because I'd like someone in the house, maybe even a debate, to talk about this rather than us chatting.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Thank you, Eric. I'll set the show up. Thanks so much.
Last week I heard a show on that on NPR, uh-huh. so we can maybe put a link up there.
We'll just copy that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
We're recorded using the Dragon Dictation and then posted
so it'll
as
be entertaining.
Our own content.
That's perfect. Oh. Ooh, I like that. So it'll be entertaining.
When we have that show, you should be 3 miles away from our station. And do not drink the water.
Let's talk about games or other things. So, and from SoCal, Rich, thank you for calling Geek Speak. What's your topic today?
I was watching a YouTube video of some company's response or some research group's response to the Google April Fools controlling, Gmail with Microsoft with hand gestures. Uh-huh. And in that, it looks somewhat believable, but they really fluffed the part where they're typing something
right.
using gestures, and I just wondered if any of you have experience with using Kinect to know how accurate it is, and
I
whether that's even remotely feasible.
I think that gestures in general are certainly something that is only improving massively quickly. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of interface design, and I bought the Kinect just to study the interface.
Uh-huh.
And I put, and just to give you an example, I put my son, who's 5, in front of it, and he understood it and used it in less than 45 seconds. And that's, for an interface designer, when you're doing user testing, people sit there and go, what do I do?
Oh, that's really impressive.
I was like, whoa, And so I knew this is something coming. And it is a very good system because you're able to just do a specific gesture and just, moving your hand left to right, up and down, it automatically opens up the menu. And It's got a very good system, and this is just a game.
It's not just a game. It's such a great interface. So
right.
After playing with yours that late night, we had a couple of beers and jumped around your living room, which was really fun. I went ahead and got one for work and handed off to students. And just a couple nights ago, and I was talking with the student James yesterday, he went ahead and got the development stack for it, which is available from the company that makes it. Mm-hmm. Kinect actually was bought by Microsoft, but they released a package that allowed an API for it. And he went ahead and plugged it into PD, which is a programming environment, Pure Data is the environment. And then he got the output of that using OSC, which is Open Sound Control, which is basically a kind of MIDI of the future, network MIDI, best way to describe it. And he then was able to run his own apps. And I mean, with this thing, he could say, well, when the right shoulder's above the left shoulder, do this. I mean, it's really, you know, the skeleton, it could track up to four or five people, something like that. It actually does skeleton recognition. Huh. And the output of the driver set really is, when this person's skeleton is at this degree inclined, do this. Like, you're talking about a person. You don't even think about how that does that. It just does it, which is amazingly cool. Now, typing? No.
No, it doesn't track finger.
Well, they didn't write the algorithms necessary to figure that out, right? So what's going on is that the Kinect is a 3D scanner. It's a real-time 3D scanner. It's shooting out a whole bunch of dots of laser, of points of laser light, right? And it fluctuates them and then has a camera looking at it and can know how far away that dot is from some triangulation.
You can see them sometimes.
If you use your video camera, just your iPhone, your cell phone's video camera, and you look in the room that's playing, you'll see all the red dots because they're infrared. And what's happening is it knows the direction, the distance of every point and the angle. And from that, it can calculate kind of the three-dimensional space. And then after that, that's like the physical object. In the software side, it says, well, a human skeleton's kind of like this. Let's try to find one in this room. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's doing all the time. And then it kind of has memory that there was a person here, you know, 1 millisecond every time it, you know, passes. So it tries to then figure out its movement characteristics. That's really complicated, but doable. And they did it. And they did a really good job of it, and it works. But that's not hands.
Right. But, I wouldn't be surprised.
You could get the same thing, the camera aimed down at hands, and hack it for that,
You can open your hands and close them, and it'll sense it. But I've seen, I mean, I worked on things, you know, tools that you use. They're like fun kind of tools. And it's able to sense where your eyes and your nose and your mouth and everything is. It knows when you're smiling, and you can have glasses put on your head, you know, fake glasses. Through the webcam, and then you can talk to somebody through the web, and then they stay in your head.
Stuff.
And so this technology, facial recognition, understanding gestures. I saw that April Fool's thing.
You're like,
and when I saw it, and I didn't I didn't look at it, but I almost wasn't surprised. I mean, I think if I'd looked at the details, like listeners saying, I might have caught that, but I didn't think that it was that.
It's
unusual.
One of those ones where 5 years from now, like that's not so.
We're coming.
At the same
time,
as a general application, there were some real complications to it, of course. And I think they were just talking about using all that with the Kinect out of the box. No, you can't do that. It's just a matter of time before we have really good gestures, like Minority Report, that kind of interface.
Could you put links to the software and the developer's kit that you talked about on your website?
If I can find them.
You know what? We can't. There's a ton of websites that talk about hacking Kinects.
If you do, just do this for yourself. Go to YouTube and do a search for Kinect. Microsoft Kinect. I think it starts with a K.
Yeah.
And you'll see all the hacks on it. Like, there's people put Kinects on flying devices, and the flying devices will drive around the room and not bump into things. Like, it's being used as a platform now for basically really cheap 3D real-time scanning.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Wow.
Awesome stuff. Thank you, Rich, for the call.
Cool.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, MIT just did one of those for, you know, that's doing terrain mapping. It's pretty cool.
I must immediately buy one.
Yeah, you got to buy one and hack
it. I got it.
Definitely.
And there's also games.
Whatever.
From Salinas, Teresa, welcome to Geek Speak.
Yes, hi. I have a question about connecting something up to my television so internet can go there, or at the very least, Netflix, and we can get movies to come up on our TV instead of this little bitty screen on the computer.
What kind of TV do you have?
I have a Sony.
Is it a flat
screen?
I have
very
old
technology. I just got to tell you.
Is it really depth, really thick?
Like, is it a big box or is it flat?
Yeah, it's not a flat screen.
Not a flat screen. Okay. So it's called a CRT, cathode ray tube.
But I am moving up to a flat screen.
You are? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this whole thing's going to be easier when you move up to a flat screen, because when you move up to a flat screen, you'll have the connectors available that will make it a little easier.
You know what? The Sony Bravia comes with Netflix built in. I have one of those.
See, you could buy a new TV that has
Netflix
built in.
It's already built in. They build it in,
And it normally has, sometimes it has a Wi-Fi card.
So you go to the menu, you know, with the menu and the TV, it'll say, you know, choose a source or something, and one of them will be internet. And you can either
you've
and
got most to of them plug in the Ethernet cable or use
right,
Wi-Fi.
Right. Most Ethernet of them have Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have a router in your home, at the back of the router, there's actually plugs. Okay. Those are Ethernet plugs. You plug one of those into the TV, and then the TV has it. Now that's assuming you're buying a new one. If you're not buying a new one,
no, I am going to buy okay. a new one.
Are you? I want to mention for people that aren't buying a new one, just so that they know.
You almost can't avoid it in new ones.
Well,
yeah, I'm kind of thinking right. that. Right. Plus, I don't like how much space this is huge.
Yeah, the CRT is quite big. It mm-hmm. also uses more power. Assuming you're not going to get a plasma.
Oh, I am concerned about that.
Of course, if you get a really big screen, I don't
yeah,
know.
Depends how big your flat panel is. Yeah.
Screen. Yeah. I'm not going to get a huge one. I don't want to take my whole living room up. I just.
Right.
But I do want to move up in technology. And
okay,
I'm
so
really,
one,
really.
One thing I want to address is if people have an older flat screen, they're not going to get a new TV, and they want to do the same kind of thing. If they're in a Macintosh environment in their home, I'd highly recommend the iTV. It's a
Apple TV.
Excuse yeah. me. Mm-hmm. See, eyes everywhere. Apple TV because it does exactly what you're kind of wanting it to do.
Apple TV.
But that kind of technology, the general technology in that box, is very akin to what's in these other in the TVs. And there are other products like that.
Google TV. There's a Google TV thing. Yeah, which lets
but
you do the
since internet. So you know, of course, you can plug you take your TV output, your computer output, and plug it your TV into it. But you're going to have to get a card most likely to do that, depending on what kind of computer you have. And since you're buying a new TV anyway, the route that we first suggested is probably the way to go. Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Well, from Santa Cruz, Jeremy, welcome to Geek Speak.
Howdy.
Howdy. What's up?
I heard you talking about the Kinect, Microsoft Kinect technology, and I listened to a TEDx talk the other day, which talked about using that kind of virtual reality technology in facilitating learning and kind of leveraging our spatial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. It was the TEDx Monterey, right?
TEDx San Francisco.
Oh, really? Okay.
It was a talk by Jaron Lanier.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he I found it really interesting.
Uh-huh.
So he talks about, say, teaching kids chemistry by having them be a molecule.
Right.
That's a great idea.
I've heard Lanier speak before and actually met him. And there's other people that I'd go with probably. But, yeah, exactly. The same type of stuff he's talking about. We're going to see a revolution in UI design based off of Kinect. Thank you. I'll try to find the article and post it up on geekspeak.org.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. Bye-bye. We might have time for one more story, one more call, rather, I should say. Let's go ahead and go for Patrick. And Patrick is in Santa Cruz as well. Patrick, hi. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello. What? Can you hear me?
We can hear you perfectly.
What about turning your e-reader into an iPad, specifically the Nook Color? I've been seeing some of that in the news.
Well, turning it into an iPad? The iPad's a very specific hardware product. It's
well,
got certain characteristics.
You can hack your Color Nook and put on a new operating system and have a more full-featured...
Is it iOS?
I don't think so. No, right. I think it's probably something like an Android or a...
So you're basically...
It supposedly has Android technology.
Right. So yeah, you can take your Color Nook actually has capability to be a better operating system if you want. You can install new Linux on it, and the Linux we're going to be talking... that you'd want to install would be the Google Android OS, and once you get that on there, you'll be able to have a web browser and things of that nature. Now, it won't be fully powered, but yeah, why not go for it? If you've got a Nook?
There's a site called NookDevs.com.
NookDevs?
That's specifically what they specialize in is hacking.
Nook what?
D-E-V-S, as in developers or developments.
Okay.
NookDevs.
Thank you so much for calling. We'll have that up on geekspeak.org, Patrick.
Thanks.
Thank you. And Lindsay, could you just read this right here, please? It's got texted into us. I'd like you to read that.
Okay. Habitable. Adjective. Capable of being inhabited. All right. Habitable. Habitable.
You're still going to pronounce it that way? Fantastic.
I'm going to say habitable.
We don't. I think we need a voice rather than a text message, right?
Yeah.
When you say, because it could describe it that way.
Well, it shows the first syllable being the emphasis.
It does. All right.
I wonder how the computer would say
it. That's just one person.
Here's what I always find, right? When I'm pronouncing something and I find that someone else pronounces it differently, I go up to dictionary.com,
take
a look, and I find out that both are correct. You know, and
that's
I'm like,
not
oh,
good enough. I want.
Out.
I think
I
you and
win.
I need to have an issue about this every week.
Yeah,
attack each other on pronunciation.
It's on.
Speaking of, Al, can I have that sheet that I handed you earlier?
Yes.
Yeah, I need that back. Thank you, sir. Everybody hear that? That's not what I need. Al, what's the crazy USB of the week, sir?
Crazy USB is actually a crazy, crazy USB. It's the Minecraft USB DeskPort Nether Portal. And you plug it into your computer, and it creates a Nether Portal that you can, like, throw things into, and then the thing appears in the Nether, which is someplace probably in another universe. Then the one thing I might want to mention is this came out on April 1st. And if there's anything special about that day, maybe you could let me know. But it is a crazy, crazy USB in that I don't think that the Nether really exists. Or at least you can't get to the Nether from this USB thing. Let's put it that way.
Rats. What's so, the Nether?
The Nether is actually in Minecraft.
Yeah.
Oh.
What's Minecraft, everyone?
Well, no, so I'm bummed because I actually am, I have not been gaming long enough to actually know what Minecraft is.
Okay.
It's actually,
although in the video, they do a nice little demo of.
Yeah. Okay. So the idea was to have
you can build portals in Minecraft and you can go to other places by going through it. It was introduced in a Halloween edition of Minecraft, the Nether portal.
Okay.
So.
But unfortunately not a real USB.
But you can go, and we will link it to geekspeak.org, and you can see their simulation of this device. And
this is the first crazy USB of the week that doesn't actually exist. Most of the time,
yes,
it really
they
does
always
exist.
I always do real ones.
This is just the April Fool's
yes.
first edition. Thank you so much. Yes. Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASPtech.com. Lindsay, since it can be pronounced both ways, let's try to pronounce it the other way, both of us, for a while.
Okay?
And
habitable.
Then correct people if they don't say habitable.
Nice.
Okay.
Whoa.
Right. Go team.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. KOSP.org because we're a nonprofit organization. If you'd like to add content to the show, we'd always love to have new music and new themes from people contributed. It'd be great. You can go to geekspeak.org, send us email there. Also, what do you think? Habitable? Habitable. What do you say? I'd love to know. Tomato, tomato, not so important, but habitable and habitable, very important. I love that I can say both those right now. In the 10 minutes, I won't be able to.
Your life is expanded.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Now, because of the sheet, not having the sheet in front of me, I've got a minute.
Yay.
I could play music, or I could ask one of you to mention a quick story that you didn't get to.
Ooh, I didn't get to my other space thing. It's pretty quick.
Okay.
NASA, they set a contest for a Final Endeavor wake-up call song, and they collected, 1,350 songs from all over the world, 60 countries, and they finally narrowed it down to 10. You can go up on the site and vote for which one will actually wake up the astronauts on the last 25th mission of Endeavor, which is happening in a week or two.
Wow.
Wow.
Nice.
From their habitable space.
They had Captain Kirk
say good morning.
Actually call the Endeavor to wake them up.
Oh,
William Shatner actually.
Love it.
What's the song you're going to vote for? Do you have to listen for it?
I haven't. There's 10 songs and I haven't listened yet.
Oh, you've got to listen.
Are they original
compositions? Yes, they are original compositions.
Wait, why does NASA get 10 songs? I asked for theme songs. We've got a total of 10 over 4 years.
I don't know why NASA would
have more. Coming up next, Car Talk with Click and Clock. See you next week.